This is the Nathans and Roncast, the podcast about the musicianship and songcraft behind the songs we love. And Michael, where are we today?
Today, we're just outside of Rockport, Massachusetts, and we're looking at the ocean as we sit here.
That's right. It's we're here on Whale Cove Road, home of the Whale Cove House Concert Series, put on by our gracious hosts, Jeff and Celine Lyon, and we're going to be playing in about an hour.
Yeah, so we figured we would do this introduction for the next big episode of our Nathans and Roncast. And on location is always a lot of fun. Since we did that at Philly Folk Fest, here's another on location with Aaron Nathans and Michael Ronstadt.
You can hear the wind coming off the coast.
Yeah, take a moment. Okay, that's your moment.
You've heard the wind. It's done.
So we interviewed Burr Settles, and he's done a lot.
Oh my God! I mean, this guy, thousands and thousands of songs have entered the universe because of the work of Burr Settles. He is the founder of February Album Writing Month, FAWM.org. And not only did he do that, but...
He was in with the founding team of Duolingo, which has rocked our world in all the best ways possible, including myself.
Michael can now speak Welsh.
I can do a little bit of Welsh, thanks to Burr Settles.
And he often does.
Yes, I speak Welsh to Aaron, whether he understands me or not. Usually he doesn't. Sometimes I don't understand. Smoothio. That was a word of the day in our first season. That's for the inside.
Smoothio, yeah. Yes.
We want to get right into it, but we wanted to introduce you to Burr Settles, and he's an amazing person and really interesting to listen to. So without any further delay, here's part one of our interview with Burr Settles.
Burr, we're here today to talk about the phenomenon that is February Album Writing Month, which I know has made a huge impact on my life. And so many of the songs that I play are songs that I wrote in February. Where did the idea come from?
Well, it wasn't intended to become like an annual regular thing initially. I was a graduate student in Madison, Wisconsin, and my wife, after finishing her MFA, had the opportunity to go work at the Smithsonian for a while. So I took a leave of absence from school, had a little more free time, so to speak. I mean, I was working full time, but November of 2003 was part of that. And I decided to do National Novel Writing Month, or NaNoWriMo.
NaNoWriMo, I remember.
In November of 2003. And I wrote a very silly novella that nobody, including myself, has ever reread. And but at the end of that, I felt like, wow, I really accomplished something. I really accomplished this thing. And I was like, but I'm not a novelist or whatever. I'm a songwriter. There should be something like this for music. And I looked and I couldn't find anything. And there was a musician from Alaska named Matt Hopper, who we had become kind of internet friends, as you do. We found each other on mp3.com, if you remember that.
I remember that.
Barely.
And so we were just chatting and we were like, well, what? Let's just do it. Let's just do our own songwriting thing for a month. And so we went back and forth, picked February because I was moving back to Madison in January and he was moving to LA in January. So we just arbitrarily picked February. We kind of arbitrarily picked 14 songs for 28 days, roped in a couple of other friends. And since we were all in different time zones, I created a multi-author blog where we could all log in and post our songs. And that was it. We were just going to do it the 1 year, but then that was 2004. But over the course of the rest of 2004, and this is before, you know, Facebook, maybe it was a thing, but maybe you still had to be at like one of 10 schools to have an account or something. Mm-hmm. It was before Twitter, but I mean, Friendster and MySpace were a thing, but the internet was very different. And so people looking for music communities just stumbled across this blog, I think, and then sent me a personal email that was like, hey, can I do this next year? Huh. And I got several of those. So then I bought the FAWM.org domain name, because it was available, and FAWM stands for February Album Writing Month. I don't know if we established that already, but so that's where it came from, and it's been a concern ever since.
Wow. Was our friend Nancy Rost one of those first few people?
She was early. I don't remember exactly when she started. I want to say 2006 was her first year.
I see.
Yeah, and she was part of the Madison Songwriters Group with you. And then,
right.
And then there were a lot of early Fommers who came out of the Madison, Wisconsin music scene.
But that first year, were you the only Madisonian?
Yeah, that first year. I was in Madison. Eric Distad was in the Twin Cities, and he still does it every year.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Hopper did it for a few years, but hasn't really been active for a long time in the Fomm scene. And then Willis Fireball, he was in Fairbanks, Alaska. I think he's like in Arizona or something now, but he's also done it every year.
That's a good name right there.
Yep.
He's got one of those names where you go, well, I got to go listen to that. Now, for our listeners, and a little bit for me, Aaron and Burr, did you meet in person ever on stage in Madison?
Apparently we did. My only memory of Burr, and because this was a long time ago, was that I was at Mother Fool's Coffee House. And at this point, it might have been, maybe it was 2003, 2004. And I remember hearing some music on the overhead system and remember liking it. And I went and picked up the CD that was sitting next to it. And it was Sketches by Burr Settles. And I thought, oh boy, I hope someday I could play like Burr Settles. So I don't, what do you remember?
That's a very flattering story. I don't know if it's true, but I appreciate
it. It's true.
Yeah, I vaguely remember. Yeah, Mother Fools. I wonder if that place is still...
I think it is.
Hopefully it's still open.
Right, post, somebody drove a car into their wall a couple of years back, but I think they rebuilt.
I think somebody back in Madison, you know, told me about that.
Yes.
I have a memory of meeting you at some sort of Fomm get-together. I don't know if it was... Like, we would try to organize these local Fomm songwriter showcases after February or Fomm over parties, FOPs.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like it was at one of those, maybe in 2000. It would have had to have been 2007 or 8, because I think that's, you started doing it in 7 or 8, and I moved here to Pittsburgh in 2009. So must have been in that brief window.
Yeah, I moved to Delaware from Madison in 2006, but I did come back a few times. So it might have been on one of those trips.
I could also be hallucinating that we've ever met. I don't know.
It was a small town. It's still pretty small. But, you know, once I arrived in Delaware, I remember I was looking for gigs and I found something of a cattle call down in Bethany Beach. And I was waiting my turn to play. And some of my best friends in this area, I met that night. And I remember hearing Laurie Citro play. And after she was done playing, I complimented her and I said, have you ever heard of February Album Writing Month? And it was something that I had just started doing to keep in touch with my friends in Madison. You know, that it was something I heard about while I was in town. I kind of sort of did it unofficially in, I want to say, 2006. But didn't actually log in. I just challenged myself privately and got maybe 3 songs in and gave up. I still remember that song that I wrote that year. But that conversation with Laurie, I think, was the virus that infected much of the Mid-Atlantic, because she started with a passion and she told a bunch of people about it. And next thing you knew, there was a vibrant Fomm community in Delaware.
Yeah, I knew that she was extremely involved in like organizing Fomm over parties and Fomm stocks and things like that in Delaware. So I didn't realize you were the one that got her plugged in. So that's awesome.
Sorry.
No, it's awesome.
You know, Aaron's the reason I got involved in it years and years later. And my married to Serenity Fisher, she got involved with it. It's an amazing community, and it's amazing to run into, like, Nathan Natrine?
Michael Natrine.
Michael Natrine, sorry.
Not to be confused with Nathan Searles, who is also involved with Fomm, but go ahead.
Yeah, anyway, they have a group called the Honey Badgers, and I've played on their album now, the most recent one. I've ended up meeting people that ended up turning into recording work, and then so many of our albums are a product of February Album Writing Month, quite honestly. I mean, Conshohocken Curve would not exist as one of our songs if it wasn't for us figuring out how do we write a may or may not be true breakup song that happens like Groundhog's Day over and over on the Conshohocken Curve going into Philly.
Which is in the spirit of Fomm.
Exactly.
You kind of get a little silly.
You know, that's one of the unforeseen amazing things. Like when we started it was really just 4 people independently, just kind of like as accountability partners, but going off in our own little corners and writing songs. And over several years, this Well, a collaborative spirit arose, and many songs, like I think something like 9 to 10% of all FOM songs every year are collaborations between people. Mm-hmm. But then also the spirit of like just picking arbitrary challenges. I mean, doing 14 songs in 28 days is arbitrary enough, but then people are like, here, write a song on about toasters in 1 hour. And then like 20 people go and do it at the exact same time during the exact same hour, and then post the song at the end of the hour. And that's called a skirmish. That's been going on for decades now. It's a community that likes to play games. Most of the people in the community like to play these games and aren't too precious about ideas, which is a real breath of fresh air, because a lot of songwriters groups are more critique oriented and less just hooray oriented, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's a place for both, I believe. But yeah, that's a happy accident.
Yeah, I was wondering, when we post songs, a lot of times, you know, the technological side, you know, you're saying, oh, you can post a YouTube link, or you could post a link to a server, you know, on your website or whatever it might be, an MP3. Like, I'm curious, because I wasn't there when it first started, but when you start something like this, I guess you're thinking, do I need server space, or do I let people just post links to their own server space? How is it going to look? You know, because sometimes you'd post something from SoundCloud or something like that, and it looks a certain way, and the YouTube link looks a certain way, and then I would post something from my webpage just as a link, and it would not be a player, it'd just be like, go to this link. And I could imagine like you've got a huge set of challenges trying to make it user friendly for all the various ways that people are going to do it. And I'm curious if when you're doing that, and it's during the month and you're kind of solving problems for people, are you able to still keep your creative songwriting going during that time? Or do you choose like March and secretly post things during then? So that's a multi-tiered question, but it seems like over the years you've probably refined that process, I'm guessing. So I'm curious how that's developed since, I guess, early on, you know.
Those are great questions. Well, one thing to say is like FOM started in 2004, so it was before YouTube existed, before SoundCloud. So back then, if you posted a demo, it was generally like a hot linked MP3 that you had to have your own server. But then over time, these other platforms arose and we started finding ways of embedding those. And so, yeah, there's some business logic in the programming that can get a little rat's nesty to like figure out this person is posting their MP3 to Dropbox, but we want it to be able to embed and play on the page because we want to support maybe not every method under the sun, but as many different ways that people choose to share their demos as possible. As far as the creative output side, the reality is from 2011 to 2020, I kind of kept FOM alive, but was not very involved. I finished my PhD in Wisconsin in 2009, moved to Pittsburgh, worked at Carnegie Mellon University for a few years, and then Duolingo spun out of Carnegie Mellon, and I kind of spun out with it. And for that decade, I my hands were full, so I wasn't.
So you were part of the team that founded Duolingo?
I wasn't one of the founders, but I joined like 6 months in or so.
Wow. And what were you doing? What was your part?
Well, my background, what my PhD from Wisconsin was in, is artificial intelligence and natural language processing.
And what year was that? 2011?
2009 was when I defended.
Wow.
And then I moved to Pittsburgh at the end of 2009 and was at Carnegie Mellon through 2012. And then I started at Duolingo at the end of 2012.
Huh.
And I was there for a decade. And I was also in a band for most of that time. Yeah, basically, as soon as I landed here in 2009, a friend from Madison had just formed a band and they were looking for a guitar player. I bumped into him at the bus stop and I was like, oh, I hear you guys have a gig next month. It's on my calendar. I'm planning to go. And he said, yeah, about that. Do you want to play with us? Play guitar.
This was in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. And this was in Pittsburgh as soon as I got here. And I was also in that band for a decade. So I think a lot of my creative musical outlet came mostly through that band, and I didn't kind of need the FOM community as much to get my personal creative juices going. Although most of the songs that we wrote and recorded in that band were things that we wrote for FOM. We would get together physically, you know, and then like write songs together as a band or bring songs that we wrote during FOM to practice. But anyway, yeah, I wasn't super involved and I was just kind of like keeping the servers on for a decade. And then the pandemic happened. The band broke up just before the pandemic happened too. And I kind of got more involved again and got very excited about it again. And then after, you know, a decade run at Duolingo and I was kind of ready for something else. I decided to take a step back, and for the last couple of years I've been doing some consulting and stuff like that, but I've been reinvesting myself in February Album Writing Month.
Is this basically your job at this point?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm also like doing some consulting and stuff to pay the bills, but my only affiliation sort of at the moment, yeah, is FOM.
You know, doing something like this takes a lot of energy, takes a lot of oomph. And was there a point at which you realized this is becoming a thing? I'm going to need to really sink my time and energy into this. And was there like ever a gut check moment? Like, boy, do I really want to continue to do this while I have these other things going on in my life?
That's a good question. I don't remember. I mean, I think I remember around 2010, because at that point, FOM was growing. It was almost doubling every year. So it wasn't quite exponential growth, but it was growing really fast. Mm. And I was worried that it was going to be, you know, I can't do this anymore. And then weirdly, after 2010, for the next decade, and maybe this just coincides with the fact that I was in another band and I was really busy, you know, working for a tech startup. And so I was putting less into it, but it just didn't grow. It flatlined. Like the number of people involved every year, the number of songs that get written every year, basically any metric you look at around FOM was flat for like 2011 to 2020.
And why do you think that was?
I mean, it could be what I just said, you know, about being in a band or being, you know, most of my energy was going toward Duolingo and research.
But you weren't pushing it, that it was kind of self-sustaining.
I think that's part of the explanation. I think another part of the explanation is around that time is when a critical mass of human beings got phones, you know, smartphones. Mm-hmm. And Twitter and Facebook and YouTube were like concerns. And basically everybody's online community attention got consolidated onto these platforms. So like more niche, built for purpose websites like FOM, I think, started to get less attention. Either people who were involved started to spend less time with it, or it was just harder to discover them because, you know, the search engine optimization was focused on these big mega platforms. And weirdly, FOM has started growing again since the pandemic. And again, it's hard to tell if that's because I've been putting more into it or if it's because there's maybe a cultural shift away from these consolidated platforms and back toward into niche communities. I don't really know.
I do have to say that ever since maybe 2021 or so, it has seemed a little bit more lively. You know, that it seems like you're mixing it up more, that your gentle, benign presence is felt in a way that maybe it wasn't. You know, when I would look and see, you know, Burr Settles 2 songs this month, I'd be like, okay, well, maybe I don't have to finish it either. But now it's like, if Burr's doing it, if he's doing 20, I got to at least do 14.
Yeah, well, 2021 was the first year I won FOM.
Really?
Since 2010.
Right.
So yeah, for that whole decade, I was just like dribbling out a few songs. But I was running the servers. I was like, FOM generally is a congenial place. There's not really many flame wars and stuff, but when they did fire up, you know, I was kind of called in by the mods, you know, so I was involved in that capacity. And Michael, to get back to your question from like 10 minutes ago.
Oh, yeah.
For that 10 years or so, I really wasn't concerned about my own creative outlet. It was a thing that I just kind of kept running because it was, I don't know, it was just a thing that I did every February. But then once I started to get reinvested in it and I started writing songs again, like 21, 22, those were actually kind of interesting, tough years for me because I was constantly trying to fix and improve the website and respond to people's feature requests and things like that while also trying to meet my own creative needs. I rewrote the website code from scratch with the help of another Falmer named Beto in 22. So it's an entirely new code base, much more modern, easier to maintain for the last 2 years. And we started adding features again. But we've just decided all the feature engineering, you know, happens in the off months. And as soon as the website opens in February, like only critical bug fixes. Like if something is not working that absolutely has to work, you know, we'll drop everything and fix it. Other than that, you know, all of your feature requests and concerns and complaints and stuff just go into a folder and we ignore it until, you know, so that we can write songs.
That's super smart. I mean, obviously you're super smart. But I think that's I love that idea of workflow. So you give yourself space. I think that's good.
And it's funny, most of the FOM community, I think, gets that and appreciates it. But then there's like this vocal minority that are just like, but I want a like button now.
It's like, that wasn't a feature when we started this. So why do you want it now? No, I'm just joking. I always wonder, I was talking to someone and we were talking about whether computers are naturally intuitive.
You mean to use?
To use just the interface of just computers in general and technology. And I think the consensus was that it wasn't in this conversation, that it's a very deeply learned, like, I mean, you have to go in and learn about that workflow. And I thought about it almost like when I'm using Logic versus Pro Tools. Like, I've got a good workflow with Logic. Pro Tools, not so much. It's just a digital tape machine at that point. I could use Sonar, like all the various programs.
Oh, we can, you know, people get into holy wars about DAWs. So,
oh yeah, yeah. And it's, to me, it's like if you can get it to sound good and it's the workflow, I don't care if you use GarageBand or not. I've heard many people who say, yeah, I use GarageBand, and I'm like, I had no idea. You just make it sound great anyway. And I'm like, okay, cool. But I just imagine that trying to figure out whether you do a like button or, you know, how social media oriented do you push the website so that it's familiar to everyone? And then how much do you say, nope, we're not going to do that because we're different? I imagine it's a challenge.
Yeah, it's a lot of both, because people ask for features that mirror what they're familiar with on the social media websites. And some of those things we incorporate or plan to incorporate. Then there's other things like the like button in particular, which I'm drawing a line in the sand where, like, I just don't think that's appropriate. And I've got my reasons for that. Among them being, I think it makes people lazy. It creates a perverse incentive for people to just go and like a bunch of things without, you know, actually listening to the song, actually giving, you know, any feedback. And while I understand and feel very personally that it's actually kind of hard to invest some mental energy into like listening to someone's nascent song and,
oh yeah,
figure out what encouraging positive thing to say about this. And, you know, that takes some work. And a lot of times I listen to a song and I don't leave a comment because it's, you know, too hard.
Oh, me too.
But I don't think having a like button would actually make that better. I think there's just value in some people use the comments box as a virtual like button where they just say great and yeah, you know, that's it. But but most of the time people, I think most of the FOM community puts effort into identifying a lyric that they particularly resonated with, or like commenting on a particular chord change or key change or tempo change, you know, between the verse and the chorus or something like that. And I think, I mean, I know I personally, even if I didn't necessarily leave a comment, like sometimes I'll hear a song and think, oh, that's clever. And then it inspires me to go and try that technique out and write a song. And then after I posted the song, then I'll go back and leave a comment that was sort of like, hey, this inspired me to try this trick that you used. And I think a like button would just make people lazy.
Well, you know, I think of when I'm doing FOM each year, whether I'm doing a lot or a little, you know, I see Aaron Nathan's page and Phil Henry's page and Nancy Roast and all these folks, and I see all this communication, right? And so I'm kind of on the other end of it. It kind of mirrors my Michael Ronstadt has a lot of albums and a lot of songs. I'm proud of them. I think that's good quality, but I've got my 10 fans and that's cool. And they interact a little bit, but I love getting the first zong as I've seen it posted.
And what is a zong, Michael?
Well, I think that's the first one, right?
The first comment on a new song.
Yeah, a zong is a zero comment song, and zong busting is, there are people who intentionally go out just finding songs with no comments yet and commenting on them.
So my first song always gets 3 to 6 comments. And then the rest of it for the rest of FOM gets nothing. But it's one of those things where I love that moment when I do get a comment every so often. So it surprises me which ones do get comments and what people focus on. Because, and I could imagine, and I could agree with you in the sense that, like, yeah, if there was a like button, it wouldn't make me feel any better if I had 20 people liking it. I want to know what they thought about it.
What you think.
And that's special. So in my capacity of not having a ton of comments on my music, when I get them, it's really special. And it's kind of like YouTube comments. I get an occasional YouTube comment and it's really special. Occasionally there's a junk comment and I have to just delete it and it makes me sad. But that doesn't happen with FOM at all. Like, it's all, you know, when people say something, they really, you know, thought deeply about it, and deeper than I even thought about it, probably because my subconscious wrote the song. So, you know.
Yeah, that's I find that as a surprising thing too. Like, when people bother to leave a comment, they often will point something out that you didn't even realize in the moment. And then also, I think the flip side, like one of the other reasons I think a like button would be bad, is because it trains you as the person who's posting a song to obsess over, you know, how many likes. I mean, you can obsess over how many comments your songs are getting too, but I think ultimately, whenever we think about new features for FOM, the underlying question is this going to help people be more productive in writing songs? Okay. And anything that taps in too far into that gamification, obsessively checking the website and stealing your attention economy, that's time you could be writing songs. But instead, you're logging into FOM, which is ostensibly there to help you write songs. So, so any sort of feature that like steals from your songwriting juice and pumps it into, like, you know, I don't know, capitalistic, you know, algorithm juice or whatever, I'm not in favor of that.
I love that. It's a really organic approach. It seems like you're there to serve the purpose rather than, yeah, like you said, it's not you're not there to benefit. I mean, I don't know if there's a financial benefit. I really don't care too much. I just think the website serves in a really organic, nice way to a community of songwriters. So it's one of those things where whatever it is, I like how that's the first thing you consider. So that makes me like FOM about 1,000% more than I already did. So thank you for telling us that. That's amazing.
So that's part one of our interview with Burr Settles, but it's a really interesting part two, which you will hear next week. So come on back. Peace.